Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who shows this? Papa.
So, Marcus, I thought he was instrumental in kind of suffocating Kevin Durant. Like we talked about KD's 9 turnovers in this game. Smart had what was responsible for a good few of those. Smart was also an absolute nuisance as it pertained to Alperen Şengün, who was so fucking fraudulent. Like, God, Alperen Şengün is. I'm trying to think of like who I would even compare him to. Like, I would say he's like, I don't even know. Like, let's see, who would I compare him to? I would probably say Şengün is probably like, I don't even know. I don't even care. Not worth the energy. It'll come to me over the course of the game. Like, I'll tell you what, in the chat, hit me in the chat with who you would compare Alperen Şengün to. But Smart was instrumental in making him uncomfortable as far as, you know, the traps that would, attack Şengün from all kinds of angles. Obviously had a whole bunch of success trapping Kevin Durant in this game as well. Just kind of overall defensively, if there was a loose ball that needed to be, you know, dove onto or grabbed or whatever, Smart was there to do that, which is really important because, you know, as much as I enjoy a game like this, it would be the Lakers would have won by a few more points if they had more guys whose natural instincts was, oh, loose ball, I go get loose ball. And Marcus Smart is one of those guys. He is absolutely critical to the Lakers' identity defensively and just kind of overall identity in this postseason run. And I think will remain critical to the Lakers' culture moving forward. And then you combine, you know, Smart's cultural production to Luke Kennard's. I just watching this guy play, I don't understand how so many teams saw that talent and either let him walk outright or traded him away, or in the Atlanta Hawks case, traded him away for Gabe Vincent's expiring contract and a second round pick that probably won't be particularly high. It's just kind of crazy that this guy has fallen through the NBA's cracks to the extent that he did. And for the Lakers, like it might complicate their offseason a little bit because he's probably going to be a little bit more expensive than they maybe budgeted for, but he's, I don't think, going anywhere. Absolutely loves playing with LeBron, right? Two Ohio guys. They've talked plenty about the chemistry that they share on a basketball court together. And in terms of just production, this dude, like watching this guy go from somewhat reluctant shooter who, you know, has been accused of efficiency farming in the past. And to go from that to, he had a shot today where he dribbles up the court, his back somehow turns away from the basket, turns around, plants his feet, lets a rip. And it was Steph-ish, right? It was Steph Curry-esque, that shot. And I, you know, it made me say to Jen, I was like, if he's hitting that one, if that is a shot that the Lakers can make this guy confident taking, let alone making, then that changes the entire dynamic of what their offense might be capable of moving forward. And no, I'm not going to go so far as to say that, like, all right, well, he did that, now it's time to get rid of Austin. No, I'm saying that when you have an Austin on your team, when you have a Luka on your team, I think LeBron's going to be on the team again next year. And you add on top of that as like some kind of like allspice, you know, Luke Kennard knocking down shots like that and freaking out defenses the way that he can when he is a secondary or a tertiary option. Just unbelievable production from the Lakers guards. And you compare that directly to Houston's guards, who, like, Josh Okogie played 24 minutes, had 7 points, was pretty meh. Amen Thompson played 42 minutes in this one. I know he's technically more of a wing, but still 42 minutes, had 16 points in this one. And they're like guards outside of that. You had Reed Shepard only play 11 minutes. He went scoreless in those 11 minutes. Aaron Holiday played 7 minutes. He was also scoreless in this game. Jayshon Tate played 9 minutes in this one. He was also scoreless. So you compare like the Lakers backcourt and the Lakers perimeter effectiveness in this game to Houston's perimeter effectiveness in this game, and it was night and day. All right. So the first, we do have a super comment. We do have several super comments, which means I get to play a couple of the most important sounds on the show, starting with the Alperen Şengün Memorial sound of the show. Unbelievable. It will never not make me laugh. Him just going down this way, just, dude, let's see if I can do it. Like him going, ooh, you know, it's just so fun to watch Alperen Şengün try to keep up with. And it's crazy to say this. One of the thoughts that really kind of struck me, I know I'll get to your guys' questions and comments here in a second, but one of the takeaways that really kind of struck me over the course of this game, the Lakers athletically are keeping up with Houston in this series in ways, in terms of, like, it really helps that Houston's ball movement is pretty bad and their, you know, just kind of overall offensive organization and efficiency is pretty poor. So I think that might help the Lakers look a little bit more athletic than they actually are. And maybe that's something that, you know, will kind of shift back to what it actually is when the Lakers play, if the Lakers play OKC in the second round. But like watching the Lakers defense operate on a string, adjust to the adjustments, execute the game plan to make sure that they take, you know, various angles and plays away from Houston's offense has been pretty spectacular to watch. So that's been really fun. Now, on top of that Şengün sound, we do have the actual most important sound on the show. After that, I will dive into your guys' questions and comments. You know which team has two thumbs and currently sits 2-0? All right, so the first question here comes from Justin Tindall, who writes, a month ago, if you were told 2 games into the playoffs, if a Laker was averaging 25 points on 65% field goal percentage and 73% field goal percentage from three, Austin is playing well. LOL. Gabe, Gabe is currently averaging 2.5 points per game. Yeah. What Luke has brought to the table here, and I presented that question to my Twitter following, I don't know, a week or two ago. And I basically just asked, like, how is this not known, like better known, what Kennard can do on the ball? And like, because look, if this was the Luke Kennard that the Lakers were getting when they traded for him, he would not have been available for Gabe Vincent and a second round pick. Just flat out. What Luke has brought to the Lakers, and kudos to Rob. Maybe he saw this coming. I somehow don't think so, but maybe he saw this coming. What Kennard has brought to this table or to the Lakers as a unit here by way of his offensive production, whether that be like his own offensive production or the production that he has for others, or the gravity that he creates for guys like LeBron, for guys like Luka, for guys like Austin. The player that the Lakers got in Luke Kennard, he is worth a first round pick. And maybe even like a Dalton tier prospect going out. And just unbelievable production that the Lakers have gotten from this guy. And like the story on Kennard to this point in his career, when it comes to like postseason production, is, well, yeah, like he starts playing, but then eventually like it just kind of dissipates and he gets attacked frequently enough defensively and is so choosy as an offensive weapon that eventually he can be kind of like played off of the court. And trust me, the Rockets are, well, take that back. I don't think they are smart or organized enough to actually attack Kennard to the extent that he should be. But like, it's in their best interest to play Luke Kennard off of the court, and it just hasn't mattered. And it's pretty insane that it just hasn't mattered what Houston tries to do this guy, whether it's when he's on defense, whether it's playing physically with him when he's on offense. Just somehow, some way, he's been able to remain a threat on or off of the ball. His production, he had 27 in the first game, 23 here in this one. So 50 points through to this point in the series so far, shooting just ridiculous numbers all over the court. And the thing about, like, yes, he did have the one shot today that I spoke about earlier where, it's like the step back turnaround three-pointer that he knocked down that made me just kind of like, wait, hold on, whoa, that's a Steph shot over there. Like, even aside from that, this guy is taking and making shots that feel fairly sustainable. Do I think he's going to have 125% field goal percentage? Like, no, obviously not. Adjusted field goal percentage? No, I don't think so. But do I think that he can continue to have this kind of impact for long enough that the Lakers can get back and build on it whenever or if they are able to get Luka and Austin back? I think it's possible. I think it's possible. And this is like kind of the point that I was making to Pete in today's Great Western Forum, or yesterday's Great Western Forum, which was like, I don't think what we've seen from the Lakers against this Rockets team has completely changed my mind as it pertains to like what they are capable of moving forward in this postseason. However, LeBron looking the way that he has looked, Luke looking the way that he has looked, if you can just add on top of that the production, even relative production, of Luka and Austin, it's an intriguing basketball team. You know, now it's you in the second round, you're playing against the worst matchup that the Lakers could possibly face. But at the very least, you know, I'm intrigued by that matchup in ways that I wasn't maybe before. And then on top of it, I think we've learned a lot about, you know, some guys that the Lakers will have the opportunity to bring back going into next season. Something that I would not have been as interested in, you know, even a month or two ago. The next question here comes from Justin Tindall again. Şengün has the most empty numbers. All right, let's actually figure this out. I want to know. I'm gonna roll through your guys's you know, Şengün comps. I see some Sabonis here, more Sabonis, a lot more Sabonis. Luis Scola is an interesting one. I actually think Scola was a little bit more impactful than Şengün has been so far. I'm trying to think of like a super offensive one because I think I find watching Alper and Şengün play basketball to be very offensive. He's like Big Baby Davis if Boston ran stuff for him. Like maybe not that bad. That's kind of mean. But this is a cursed name, and I might regret saying this, but like he's a little Tim Thomas-ish to me. And fuck Tim Thomas forever for the shot that he made against the Lakers. But he's in that kind of realm, right? Sabonis is a good one. Sabonis came up over the course of in the offside chat as a player comp. I think like Miles Turner. Oh no, Maurice Spates. That's like just way too much confidence. just way too much confidence. Throws his body all over the place, whines about every call. Just a ridiculous NBA player who I am like genuinely happy is kind of sort of getting a comeuppance, you know, in this series where he's such a clear example of the, you know, the run starts after you, you know, premise, you know, or concept. It's just, I can't, if I was a Rockets fan, I would demand that Şengün get traded this summer. Like, as soon as this series is over, Şengün is on the market. Because I do not believe in this dude as a talent. Let's see. The next question here that we have comes from Let's Run UNLV. Would love a camera on Bill Simmons tonight, who is a KD fanboy. KD has been worse than LeBron at basketball for every minute of his life. Go Lakers. I think Simmons predicted that the Rockets were going to sweep the Lakers in this series. NBA award voter, Bill Simmons, everybody. Let's see. The next one here comes from Brandon Omeng, who writes, Smith is better than Bronny. Maxey is better than Hayes. Need to limit Jake's minutes. Well, we need to see where Jake's ankle currently like how it feels after tonight's game. He was not moving very well in this one. I also like lights are kind of bright for Jake. Now, I do want to give a little bit of not a full pass or whatever, but like I do want to give, you know, offer a little bit of bail for Vando, for Rui, and for Jake because of how hard they are playing to limit Kevin Durant. So, like, yeah, you have, you know, you have 0 points from Jared Vanderbilt and 0 points from Jake LaRavia. And Rui only had like 13 points in this one. But Rui played 43 minutes. Vanderbilt played 14 minutes and Jake LaRavia played 16 minutes. And basically every minute, you know, so, and then you compare that to Kevin Durant who played 41 minutes. So between those wings, only 7 minutes were those guys on the court and not just solely focused on limiting one of the best pure scorers in the history of the sport who still has quite a bit left in the tank. So I will float a little bit of bail there for Jake, for Vando, for Rui. What I will say, though, is that like as the series shifts back to Houston, I don't think the Lakers can afford to get absolutely nothing from Jared Vanderbilt and from Jake LaRavia. And then certainly after this series, if, you know, now hopefully Luka comes back and he eats into some of those minutes and Austin comes back and he eats into some of those minutes. According to Shams, the sources that he has closer to the Lakers say that Austin is closer than Luka. I personally haven't heard that, but I'm perfectly fine being wrong. If that's how this all plays out, it might also be relatively speaking, and neither guy are particularly close. But regardless, for those guys, that I do think, you know, in games 3 and 4 in the series, the Lakers will need to get something from them, whether it's getting out in transition and finishing in transition, knocking down one open 3-pointer from those guys would be helpful. Just anything whatsoever. So long as they continue playing the kind of defense that they have played on Kevin Durant, which really, like, in terms of my priority list, playing the kind of defense that they played on KD tonight sits way higher than any kind of offensive production, but you do still need some offensive production. Now, as far as Smith and Bronny, tomato, tomato, Maxey and Hayes, I get it a little bit. I don't think it's a coincidence that Hayes finished this game a game high plus 12. DeAndre Ayton didn't play down the stretch in this one. I haven't looked to see what the reasoning was on that front from JJ Redick. I'll probably talk about it in tomorrow's show with Raj. But as far as, like, you know, what the Lakers have you know, kind of gotten from Jackson, it's kind of what you've been hoping for. Hasn't really caught like a whole bunch over the top. He's been kind of pushed around a little bit. I do think he has been pretty effective in just like trying to box out and let other guys get rebounds. And I think that's why his plus minus is where it is, even though his like individual production isn't maybe where we would like to see it. I just don't necessarily think that Maxey Kleba has anything left in the tank. Now, what I would like to be able to talk about here would be Drew Timmy instead of either Maxey or Hayes, or like Maxey and or a Jackson and Timmy front court instead of a Jackson and like Jake front court or something like that. That's something that I'd be a little bit more intrigued by. But as it stands right now, I don't have too much to complain about as far as like a backup center goes in this series. Look, you compare it to the Houston backup center situation there, where like every time Clint Capela steps onto the court, all of the Lakers see a big, giant target walking onto the court. Like that, I would much rather the Lakers have Jackson Hayes in this series than Clint Capela. It reminds, like, Clint Capela, whenever he steps onto the court, there was a movie, Starship Troopers, I think is what it was called. Tim Allen space movie. Galaxy Quest. I don't know if you guys ever saw Galaxy Quest, but in Galaxy Quest, there's this scene where like this one alien race, you know, is there and they're observing this alien race, and initially it looks like the aliens are letting this like older alien walk in there and eat first, and the main character's like, oh my god, that's so cute, they take care of their old, da, da, da. And then as soon as the older alien like bends down to eat, they all just start ripping at this dude, and you see like a spleen fly over here and intestines go over here, and they're all like, oh my god. Like, that's what it looks like when Clint Capela walks on out onto the court, where it's like, oh, that's so cute, they're so happy to see him. And it's like, oh my god, there goes Clint Capela's fine, you know. It's like, it's just, and that's not the case when Jackson Hayes goes out there. So, you know, in terms of which backup I would rather have, pretty clearly Jackson. Let's see. Is that it as far as super comments go? Nope. We got another one here. Justin Tyndall writes, I laughed when he's saying Şengün fouled Marcus 70 feet from the basket in the crunch time when it mattered in the bonus. So it's funny because Ime Udoka clearly doesn't trust Reed Shepherd. And honestly, I don't think he really trusts Alperen Şengün. But he has to play one of those two guys. So he's basically decided, I'm going to play the more proven guy, the bigger guy, the guy who's been around here a little bit longer. And Alperen, to this point, has rewarded him with just a whole bunch of fart noises. Like, he has been so bad in this series so far. Now, look, I'm going to knock on wood, because if he is able to figure this out a little bit more, and if he is able to just kind of, like, you know, outplay DeAndre Ayton, and that kind of changes the outlook of game three and maybe game four. And if I'm the Lakers, I would really like to win one of game three or four here. C-Mac dropping number tally, put a bingo reference. Honestly, we're good. We're set. I was not ready for that name drop there, and that is so effing good. Thank you, C-Mac. That killed me. That was amazing. Vitaly Potapenko. Amazing. All right. I'm going to go ahead and end this thing here because it is 1:42 my time. And I'm going to sit here and laugh for like the next 15 minutes about Potapenko. Thank you everybody for tuning in. A reminder, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please turn on those notifications for YouTube and for this channel specifically. If you guys are listening in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get them. And until tomorrow, when hopefully the plan is to talk to Raj about the series to this point, I am Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. It's a Vitaly Potapenko. I hope you're okay.